My guest is a traveling folk singer-songwriter with an underground following all over the country and beyond. John Craigie is based in San Francisco and stopped in on his way through the upper Midwest to share some music and conversation with Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. Welcome, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we mentioned, I just mentioned that you're a traveling folk singer-songwriter. And in a way, you're kind of a throwback to the traveling troubadours of Europe and in our country back in the 30s and 40s, and Woody Guthrie and Leadbelly and guys like that that just would throw a guitar over their back and go from town to town. So how long have you been doing this? How did you get started with it?
Yeah, I've been on the road for about 6 years now, and when I was a kid, I wanted to play, and I wasn't very good. I got a guitar when I was 16, and this is the 90s in Los Angeles, and so it was like a weird area and time to be playing music. A lot of the music at the time was like that kind of pop rock, you know, and Matchbox 20, Third Eye Blind. It was just right after the grunge thing. So me and my friends who were trying to learn stuff, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know what to play. And it wasn't until my English teacher, I think he saw, there was a talent show at my school, and I played one of my songs. That was pretty bad, you know.
One of your own songs?
Yeah, I started writing at that point, but it was just not good. And I didn't know where to pull from. You know, I think everyone, you know, we're not Mozart. Like, we have to, like, write, you know, from what we hear. And so I was kind of inspired by that. So he saw that I was the only kid, I think, in the school who was playing that kind of, like, acoustic guitar, not electric. So he gave me Free Will and Bob Dylan, and then he gave me Joni Mitchell's Blue. Let me borrow those two albums. And I heard that, and I was really impressed and really excited.
Quite an English teacher. That's
great.
Yeah,
he's a really cool guy, yeah. And he did it really in a really sort of passive way, too. He said, hey, check this out. This is more. Because there weren't, you know, when I was a kid, there'd be like the one acoustic track on the rock album.
Right. They might have one ballad that was kind of, yeah.
The monster ballad, they would call it. You know? and we would flock to those songs because it was like an acoustic guitar and you'd learn.
Yeah.
You know, if you remember, there was that one Green Day song that was like, you know, hope you had the time of, yeah. And like, you know,
and
that
you could
was,
figure out the chords.
Yeah, it was easy. And like that song, as cheesy as it was, like that was something that spoke to us because it was like, it was just a guy on a guitar. So when I heard this album, you know, the whole thing was one guy and his guitar. And so I immediately started to research all that stuff. And then I went to college in Santa Cruz, and there was a lot more folk singers there. And so I got a degree in mathematics from UC Santa Cruz and taught for about 6 months and really did not like it. Yeah.
Taught math?
I taught different things. I taught math at a high school, and then I taught I just took odd jobs, you know, taught reading at an elementary school, and I did some substitute teaching, but I didn't like it. And at that time, there was no MySpace, and so touring still like felt like getting your music out there, and touring still felt pretty foreign. And everyone I knew who was touring had a label and had a manager. So it wasn't until my aunt, who lives in Boulder, Colorado, one summer said, "Hey, come out and see us. Play some coffee shops here. I can help you get the gigs." And so I booked a few shows on the way. And then once I did that tour, there was no turning back. You know, I said, "All right, well."
That was it.
Yeah. No more teaching, no more apartment, just.
Yeah, you knew what you wanted to be doing.
Mm-hmm. And it was still a long process to get here, but that's the short story of it.
Yeah. You have a fairly new album out, and why don't you start with one of the songs from that? What's the name of the album, and what would you like to start with?
The album's called October is the Kindest Month, which is a T.S. Eliot reference to April, it's the cruelest month. And but it's also about sort of my love of autumn and my feel of the time I wrote it was coming out of a tumultuous summer, and I was looking forward to the autumn. And so this is the opening track called All of July. It goes like this. Pay for all of my sins, I must run away again. I'm disappearing for the whole month of July to a town I cannot name with my heart all full of shame. I just hope nobody asks me why. Welcome me in with the open arms of friends, and I'll do my best to leave it a better place. the silence in my mouth. From all the hate down south, I will absorb it and then send it on its way. Because a man cannot say goodbye anymore. Oh, a man cannot say goodbye anymore. All the deep sleep it will come. I will wake up with the sun, drink my water, and sit out with the birds. For I feel my only crime is being hungry all the time, in every possible definition of that word. Oh, and a man cannot say goodbye anymore. No, oh, a man cannot say goodbye anymore. I must pay for all of my sins. I must run away again. I'm disappearing for the whole month of July.
All of July is the name of that song. If you're just tuning in, my guest is John Craigie here on Simply Folk. I'm Stephanie Elkins, and he's a very talented singer-songwriter. Tours the country, tours beyond the country, and you're quite a prolific songwriter. This is your,
seventh studio album. Yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Thank you. I try to put out one at least every year and a half. I try to put out the new batch.
What kind of themes do you write about? What inspires you?
Well, I tend to, I was in Norfolk, Nebraska last week, and the woman was talking to me afterwards, and she said, she called my music the highway blues, you know, which I was a compliment. I don't know if I'm not the greatest of the blues, but I do find like a lot of my themes range from traveling and from inspiring people to escape if they need to escape or go if they need to go. And then what ends up happening a lot is stories you hear on the road or experiences you have, or that tends to find its way into the song. So I find that I'm either writing about my own travel and my own escape, or encouraging someone else to do so, or just whatever random thing happens, you know.
Right, or you're a traveling singer-songwriter writing about being a traveling singer-songwriter in some cases.
Yeah, I try not to do too many of those. I think that's probably the default, you know. People want to hear more about that, and that. Yeah. So the stories come out of that.
It's a rich experience, I would think.
Oh, yeah, definitely, especially when you're doing it in this unsigned form, because then every night is different. You know, you're not just, it's not the same theater every night. You know, you're sleeping on the couches, and you are, there's no barrier between you and the audience. There's no backstage sometimes. So you have to,
You're just directly with your audience, which is the appeal of your kind of music for the audience, and probably the appeal for you
for
doing it.
They become your record label in a sense. They tell you what's good and what's not. They tell you whether they're going to pay for it or not. And they tend to give you the true honest feedback that I feel like executives wouldn't really understand. And so it's really nice to have them come up to you and tell you straight up, you know, I didn't like what you did this, or this wasn't funny, or, you know, whatever. So you need that. I think every artist needs that.
You do. Have you ever tried going the formal route in terms of record labels in Nashville and that kind of thing?
Yes, actually, that brings me to the next song. Yeah, I went to Nashville one time, not necessarily to do that. I had heard nothing, people in my school of folk singers, a few of them have gone on to be signed and things like that. And they were always telling me the struggles that they had with that. I knew it didn't really fit. That, there's been a couple times where I've just talked with certain labels and the offers, you know, obviously weren't great and just didn't fit. And everyone's always been cool. They always kind of understand. I think a lot of labels now are understanding their place, and they see a guy like me and they know it's not really their place, you know. So I went to Nashville years ago, mostly just to play. And there's a place called the Ryman Auditorium, which is sort of a beautiful venue and kind of like a mecca for, I think, a lot of us. And so I went there and I played, and it was just it was, as far as like performing, there's kind of a disaster. There's just too many. You get the same thing in Los Angeles. There's just too many people that have moved there and set up shop in order to get discovered and
trying to make it big.
Yeah, yeah. And there's just a lot of me's walking around, you know, even with a little hat I usually wear, you know, they were all wearing that. And so the gigs were just rough. It was, you'd get two songs and there'd be like 40 people on the bill, and your whole audience was the people that were there to wait to play. And so it was just a really strange. So I went there once and I did get a nice song out of it called Mama Nashville, which has been fun to sing. And if you want to hear that,
yeah, one, I'd love to hear that one. Mama Nashville.
And this is nothing against, I like Nashville and I like Nashvillians, but as far, this is just my experience there. Called Mama Nashville.
Up in Whitefish, they gotta settle down somewhere. This roaming and the rambling, it won't get me anywhere. Everybody's screaming Nashville, that's where the stars are made. So I picked up my guitar and I headed Nashville way. And I went down to Second Ave, I got myself a gig with 37 other singers also on the bill. I tell you, all them locals, they long since moved away. My crowd was just the other singers waiting to get on stage. So goodbye, I don't need you, and Lord knows you don't need me. Well, goodbye, Mama Nashville, you got too many mouths to feed. Told me not to go down there and sing my originals. They said some Nashville country singer would steal my melodies and my words. If they want to find some fortune, they better rob somebody else. I barely have the balls to sing these songs myself. So goodbye, I don't need you, and Lord knows you don't need me. Well, goodbye, Mama Nashville, you got too many mouths to feed. Yeah. So I lit down a Shreveport as fast as I could. I love the way they talk there and them women treat me good. They say a reincarnation is happening in that town. All them lawyers come back at mosquitoes, or is it the other way around? Oh yes, and goodbye, I don't need you, and Lord knows you don't need me. Well, goodbye, Mama Nashville, you got too many mouths to feed. Lord, Lord, you got too many mouths to feed.
Mama Nashville is the name of that song. That's not from the newest CD. That's from the one before, right?
Yeah, that's from my album called Montana Tale, which is a favorite of mine. I still play a lot of tunes off that one. That came out just about 2.5 years ago.
Do you do all the recording and engineering for your CDs yourself?
I do produce my own albums, but I try to assemble a team of people. So my last two albums were recorded in California with a really nice engineer, and I worked with some great musicians. A guy named Randy Schwartz played the drums, and he was the drummer for Brett Denon, if you know who Brett is. And then Zach Gill did the keyboard on the last two albums and piano and accordion. And he works with Jack Johnson in a band called ALO, if you know those guys. And so I try to assemble the best musicians that will play with me, that I can afford, and they'll play with me. And I do like having the engineer is a really cool guy, and he kind of plays with my sense of looseness and sense of trying to avoid the pop and the cheese and all that stuff. So
yeah, I have to. The CDs have sounded great. I've been listening, getting ready for you to be here, and I love it just here with your guitar and your harmonica. But you've done a really nice job at assembling a team that doesn't overpower your songs, that really just more supports what you're doing.
Yeah, I felt like my show is always solo, you know, and I kind of look to my heroes like John Prine and Arlo Guthrie, and I watched how they did it, and I felt, you know, their strength live was them solo in there, and people, that's what people wanted. But on their albums, they kind of gave us that extra treat to say, like, we can give you something. You're going to hear this a lot, hopefully, and you should get a little treat. And so I try to get musicians that will add that, but again, not, you know, not overpower or take away. And that's the balance, and that's the sort of challenge I face myself, you know, with myself.
I've heard you compared to John Prine, Todd Snyder, Greg Brown, Bob Dylan. Do you agree with those kinds of assessments?
Yeah, that's always very flattering. You know, people, it's funny when you go on the road and you realize that it's whatever the audience feels you are. I mean, sometimes you'll get compared to weird things, you know, mm-hmm. like things that maybe you don't, you know, like some guy will come up and he's like, I'm hearing a lot of Bob Seger in there, craziness. And you're like, oh, well, I didn't know that. But yeah, I mean, all those people are people that I listen to and inspire. I think especially Arlo and John Prine and Ramblin' Jack and Utah Phillips, as far as like storytellers and guys, I really admired them because their voices, you know, it took me a long time to even just get the voice I have, which I feel is just good and utilitarian. I watched these guys and their voices were very simple. And I think that's what kind of helped get the message across.
Yeah, unadorned. It's just a straight message.
Yeah, whereas sometimes I think some of these guys with real flashy voices that, because it's good, could get in the way. And so I was always really impressed by just the real human side of those guys. And so, and I've been lucky enough to see a lot of those people. And I just opened for Todd 2 months ago and got to meet him. And so, you know, it's really nice to be able to meet these people who influence you and to still continue to watch them, you know, make
sure,
art.
Sure is. Well, we've lost a lot of wonderful songwriters and performers. And one of the most requested songs of yours is a song called 28.
Yes.
How old were you when you wrote that song?
I had just turned 27. And it was funny. I was driving around and I have different fans. Who like friends of mine that have seen me go, and they, one guy called me one time, I think he said, John, did you just turn 27? I said, yeah. And I remember he said, cool, if you die, you get to be in that club, you know. And I had, you know, because I'm kind of a music geek, I knew what he was talking about. There's this thing called the 27 Club, which primarily features Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, and there's, of course, others too that have joined that club. And so it got me thinking a lot that year and thinking about myself and my place in the biz, and you know, you look at all those, they were all interesting characters, and so I wrote this song and I played it, you know, that whole year, and then had a really nice, on my 28th birthday, had a really nice performance of it. One thing I did notice that was kind of fun when he said that, I thought, well, you know, I guess maybe if I did die, but then I did the research and it was all rock stars. There weren't any folk singers in that group. So then I got nervous that I'd get up there and they wouldn't let me in, you know, like I'd be like, hey, you guys want to sing some Woody Guthrie around the fire? And they're like, we're going to go do some drugs. Oh, cool. Well, whenever you're ready, I'll be by the fire, you know? And so I was like noticing all of my heroes, like Ramblin' Jack just turned 80 and Pete Seeger is 90. And so I realized I just wanted to be whatever club they were in, you know? So this is a song called 28. Yeah, sometimes I can probably forget which one. Here we go.
Jim Morrison, Miami County Prison, looking out the window at the barbed wire fence, singing, this ain't for me. This rock and roll scene, I should be writing poetry on a farm out in France. Cause I can't see through the darkness, I can't feel no pain. Seems you lose your spark when you achieve your fame. I could start it all over, yeah, I could escape if I could only make it to 28, if I could only make it to 28. Oh, and Janis Joplin, 1 foot in the coffin, left that theater rocking, and she walked on out the door. She put her head in her hand. She said, I drained myself for these fans. can't. I ain't never been this dry before. I'm gonna move out of this Chelsea hotel. Stop drinking all the time. Stop blowing that Cohen and listening to him whine. Because I know that I am beautiful and I will prove it someday. If I could only make it to 28, if I could only make it to 28. And Kurt Cobain sat in his shed in the rain, stomach full of pain, eyes growing dark. He said, I am losing control. I ought to move down to San Francisco, light candles at all of my shows, and switch to acoustic guitars. Because this world don't need no more tension and hate. It needs a reason for these kids to stand up and create. And I could pull this trigger, I could just walk away. If I could only make it to 28, if I could only make it to 28, if I could only make it. If I could only make it.
"28," the name of the song, and you made it to 28.
Yes, thank you. Just barely. No.
You sing a lot about creativity, and you said you were a math major in college. Do you think there's a connection between math and physics and that side of things, and also words and the arts and music?
Yeah, I think so. I went to UC Santa Cruz, which was like a pretty hippie school at the time, which is why my guitar has all this paint on it.
Gorgeous guitar, by the way.
You can't
see it on the radio, but we'll post a photo on Facebook. But it's beautifully painted with sun and peace sign and hearts and lots of colors, butterflies.
Yeah, I lived at this hippie house, and they were I was young, you know, back then, and they would just be like, "John, can we paint on your guitar, man?" And I was just like, "I guess so," you know. And then it just kind of got out of hand. But it was, I didn't realize at the time I'd be traveling all around the country, you know, and going to the deep south with a rainbow on my guitar. But everyone's been very, very kind.
Well, it's very memorable. That's for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. But yeah, so I did my thesis on infinity. It was a very like loose approach to math. You know, people get impressed by my math degree, but I always tell them it came with a little bit of ease. It was nice. There was still some hard stuff, but I did appreciate like the potential that was instilled in like the infinity idea, and how there's this notion of big infinity, which is like what we normally think of, but also this notion of small infinity, where between from zero to infinity, there's an infinite number of numbers, but between zero and one, there's also an infinite number of numbers, and how like a rock is made up of an infinite number of particles, if you will. And so I got really into what they call small infinity, and I was really impressed by that, how within our sort of finite lifetime, you know, there's infinite possibilities, and within our finite body or our finite strength, that we have this infinite potential. And so that was something that encouraged me, and it gave me stuff to write about and stuff to sort of pass on. So I was really into that, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, sounds like it helped inform your songwriting.
Yeah, a lot of my early songs were kind of like, used a lot of, even like the love songs would use these sort of like infinite ideas and these sort of mathematical, they were kind of dorky, but like, they worked out at the time, you know.
Many folk song writers use social issues and use their music as a platform for social issues and social commentary. Do you ever do that?
Yeah, people ask me that a lot, you know, especially now in these times and when the Occupy. I went down to some of the Occupies when it was coming out. I feel like the protest song in our modern world is a little, it's touchy because there's part of it that's like kind of antiquated and cliche, and so you want to avoid that. There's got to be a more updated way. And so I had found in the past years, I do a little bit of humor too in my shows. I'd found there's a way you can bring people together through that, and sort of slip it in, not if you're too overtly political or too overtly to a cause. I think sometimes people, even the people who are for that cause, sometimes think this is a little too cheesy or a little too like cliche. So I had found that if you can sing about being human, if you can really make the human experience as pure as possible, then you have liberals and conservatives laughing side by side and maybe singing along at certain parts. And if they can walk away from the show with that, I think that I think Arlo Guthrie said it best where he talked about there's like the little piece inside of us all and the big piece. And he said, if we could all kind of find that little piece, the big piece would work itself out. And so that's kind of where I come from, that school.
Well, and a lot of your music or your songs are funny. I mean, you're quite witty. And do you use comedy a lot between songs and creating a rapport with the audience?
Yeah, people really tend to talk to me about that more. And that was definitely coming from, as a kid, I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. I wasn't very funny, you know. I remember at lunch I would have all these like bits about, you know, science class or about the DuckTales or like little cartoons we'd watch and stuff like that. And they weren't very funny. But when I started playing music, I was really nervous in the early days and I wouldn't say anything. But then you'd go on tour and just things would happen and you had no one to talk to except the next day's audience. And so I would just kind of start telling the stories and people really liked that. And so I've worked that in there and that's a huge plus, I think, people. And that's, again, pulled from people like Arlo and John Prine and Ramblin' Jack. They taught me how to tell the story. It was always in there. They taught me how to do it.
Well, I think that's a fundamental part of folk singing, too, is creating that genuine, direct rapport with the audience where there's a very strong connection. And humor certainly is a great way to do that, and telling stories. And it sounds like you fit right into that.
Yeah, if you think about like a performance is such a strange and weird and sort of unnatural social thing in the sense that a bunch of people come and sit quietly and listen to one other person. And so I feel like with folk music, the more you can do to break down that barrier of stage and audience, and the more you can do to make everyone sort of feel like it's just sort of one thing, that's our job. That's what we do, you know.
Well, and you obviously do it well. What would you like to play next?
I'll do this song. This is a song called So Many Lives off my latest album, and this is a cute song. I just played this a couple weeks ago. I got hired to do a 10-year-old's birthday party. What's nice about being on the road is the fans will want you to do different things. I've done anniversary parties, 2-year-old birthday parties, and
2-year-old birthday parties.
Yeah, yeah, and those are easier because you just do Baby Beluga and Itsy Bitsy Spider and stuff like that. 10-year-old was a little nervous, but she said that she had my album Montana Tale, and she said 28 was her favorite song, which was pretty surreal. We all sang along that at the end, and they were all singing along. These 10-year-olds singing, if I could only make it to 28.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal, but that's how the road goes. So anyway, this is a song called So Many Lives, and it's off my latest album, and it goes like this.
When I was a caterpillar inching along, I stared up at the sunshine all day long. I fell for all the butterflies floating around. I didn't have a prayer, boys, butterflies never looked down. It's been so many lives just to find your eyes, baby, gotta let me in. When I was a bumblebee, baby, you were the queen. And they told me of your beauty, oh, but I never did see. I sang outside your window every day as the sun went down. I guess you were busy, or you never came around. And it's been so many lives just to find your eyes, baby, you gotta let me. Swimming free, spend my lonely nights out in the cold Spanish sea. And they told me you were out there off the coast of Oregon. I swam around the world, baby, but I guess you were already gone. Yeah, and it's been so many lives just to find your eyes. Babe, you gotta let me in. When I was a chimpanzee, swinging from the vines, I walked across the jungle just to sit down by your side. But when I finally got there, there were too many on your arms. I fell out of the trees singing last time's a charm. And it's been so many lives and just to find your eyes. Babe, you gotta let me in. Oh, it's been so many lives. I tell you, now's our time. Oh, just let me in. Oh, oh, oh. Just let me in.
John Craigie with So Many Lives, playing the guitar and the harmonica and singing on the road. Comes through the upper Midwest a couple of times a year. If you're just tuning in, I'm Stephanie Elkins, and this is Simply Folk. And I've been talking with John Craigie, that's C-R-A-I-G-I-E. And if you're interested in his music and his life and everything he's doing and touring, you can find more information at johncraigiemusic.com. John, do you do all of the social media stuff as well, the Twitter and Facebook? And
yeah, pretty much. I got a guy who helps me with my website and stuff like that, but I try to get back to all the emails that I can, and I'm on the Facebook and everything like that. So yeah, it's most of my day I spend doing booking emails and answering the emails and different questions people have, and then play the show and then sleep and then drive to the next one.
Do you get lonely on the road? You're by yourself, right?
Yeah, people ask that a lot. It's kind of the opposite in a way. It's after this point, every town I have a different person either that opens for me or that I stay with. And it's really nice. And then you've been gone for 6 months, so everyone's really nice to you. And so you kind of cherish those moments between towns when you're driving. That's kind of your time in your own head. You get to a town, it's kind of a whirlwind. You be social, you do the show, be more social.
Mm-hmm. You got to be out of yourself all the time.
And yeah, yeah. So it's loneliness is definitely not one of the emotions that you receive. It's just you try to just balance everything and give yourself your alone time so you can get in with your head and write those songs and sort of process what happened each day. I feel like if you didn't have that, if there was like a teleporter and I just went to each town, I would lose a lot of the magic. Yeah,
that downtime that gives you the creativity, mm-hmm. time for all those things to percolate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Good. Well, they've been percolating quite a bit. You've got a tremendous amount of material, and you're sharing it with audiences, large and small, all across the country. Let us know next time you're back in the Upper Midwest and in Wisconsin.
Definitely.
Love to let Wisconsin Public Radio listeners know where they can hear you and what you're
Thank
up
you
to
so.
And so forth. Thank you for coming in and sharing your time and talent with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
What would you like to finish with?
I'll close with this song. This is sort of a unique song of mine. This was written after a firsthand account that I had. I went to go sing karaoke. I had a writer's block for about 6 months, and I hadn't written a song, and I was really nervous about that. And a friend of mine told me that I was staying with a friend of mine in Oakland, California, and he said there was this karaoke night in the city in San Francisco that was full of characters that I would probably get a song out of. And I went over there and just had a really interesting experience, and it did cure me of my writer's block. And so this is a word-for-word account of what happened, a conversation I had with someone. And I definitely, I changed it to do a radio-friendly version. I don't ever say bad words on stage, but in this story, the woman said something to me. So I will use the word forget instead of the other word, because that tends to...
We appreciate that.
Of course, yeah.
Thank you.
The point gets across. So mm-hmm. this is a story about redemption and about karaoke and about overcoming writer's block. And it starts on the BART, which is their subway over there. And if you get on the BART in Oakland, you got to go underwater to get to the city. And that's where the song starts.
Oh, the westbound BART dove underwater and my ears popped and your eyes watered and the mascara ran down your face. And you looked at me from three rows away as if to say, please stop staring at me. And so I did. And you got off at 16th and Mission, and I did too. I didn't want it to seem like I was following you. It was just the same stop I was getting off, I swear. And you walked on down the street, and I walked behind, but you kept on making the same turns that I was gonna make, till finally you stepped in to the same bar that I was going to. And it was Tuesday night, karaoke, and I sang Lay Lady Lay with a funny voice, I know. And you sang Bohemian Rhapsody, and everybody sang along, especially on that part that says, I sometimes wish I'd never been born at all. Done, and the crowd around you had dispersed. I went up to tell you just what a great job you had done. And you said, I wonder if when Freddie Mercury wrote Bohemian Rhapsody, if he knew it was going to be the ultimate song for karaoke. And I said, what about American Pie? And you said, forget American Pie. Our generation cannot identify. We throw my Chevy to the levee. It ain't nothing when compared to. I sometimes wish I'd never been born at all. You said, well, that was a great version of Lay, Lady, Lay, with the funnier voice and all. Back from Nashville skyline days, if I do recall. And I say, yeah, you know I don't normally do this karaoke thing, but if I do, I either sing that song or everybody must get stoned. Rainy Day Women, number 12 and 35. Technically, that's what that song's called, I think. You say, yeah, what's with that song title? What's with the 12 and 35? I said, well, 12 times 35 is 420. And you know what they say about 420, but maybe that's just the math major in me talking. I don't know what it means, it just does. But girl, you know, I used to roam around and sing my own songs and play my own guitar. But it's been a while since I've been on the road. You see, I lost my muse and I have not written a song in about a year or so. I'm taking a little break. My friends call it retirement, I don't know. Yeah, but just today, the most amazing thing happened. I saw something beautiful, and I felt the spark of a brand new song that I have not felt in so long. And you said, sing it to me. I said, it's not ready to sing, because all I have is the very first line. And you said, if you don't sing me that first line now, there will never be a second line. Oh, give me what you got, boy, or else go home. I say, okay, here goes. Oh, the westbound bird dove underwater and my ears popped in. Your eyes watered and the mascara ran down your face.
Coming full circle. Westbound Bart, the name of the song.
Thanks, David.
Written and performed by John Craigie, my guest here on Simply Folk. Just marvelous, wonderful songs, John.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. John Craigie, it can be discovered or researched or whatever you'd like to do online at johncraigiemusic.com. And we have a link up on our Facebook page and on our page at simplyfolk.org. Thank you very much for coming in, John.
Thanks, Stephanie. It was great.
And thanks also to Brittany DeAnda, who helped produce this segment and also did all of the engineering. I'm Stephanie Elkins, and you're listening to Simply Folk on Wisconsin Public Radio.